But he's one piece of people like Mr. Fowler.
But that's what he's saying. But you would, so you would be interested in hearing his view or his perspective on all of this that has happened?
Of course, of course.
But join me in the call for him to come out of retirement.
I would like to hear
from him if he is thinking the same thing he's thinking before, if his views have changed, if they've been modified, if he thinks there's any mistakes made. I would like to hear from him. He's your friend?
He's not my friend, but I follow him all the time because if I speak into any issue for Rich, he's big. I won't quote him verbatim and I don't want to misquote him in anything that he says. So I follow him directly because I want to get the information accurate. Mm-hmm. But the problem I have with the support of the Democratic Party is that they have not come to grips with the fact that the whole their support has run this country down the drain.
They haven't, but I am confident in myself that the longer it takes for them to come to grips with that reality, the longer it will take for them to get back into office. So if they want to continue the charade. I listened to the General Secretary last week talking about that they would have thought long and hard before they sent home anybody. And I'm saying to myself, these guys realize that you're speaking to an intelligent population. So he is clearly clueless in terms of his strategy on the way forward. And if he wants to continue along that road, then let him go along. But as I said, the longer that they talk that talk, the longer they're going to be in opposition. Because 5 years is not a long time, right? 5 years is not a long time. We are already approaching the first Christmas, and soon we are going to be in the first quarter of the year, and then we'll be looking at the end of the first year. And I'm saying that there will come a time very shortly where candidate selection and things like that will have to be put on the table.
Peter, don't let me even go there. In closing, I want to say that. Don't let me even go there. Mm-hmm. The Democratic Left Party, even though that I welcome opposition, I hear people talking about a strong opposition. We can want a stronger opposition than the last.
You got a strong opposition, Caswell Franklin.
But the point I want to make.
That's all the opposition that you need.
But the point I want to make to the members and supporters of the Democratic Left Party is that regardless of who they're put in place at this time, right? Regardless of who they're put in place at this time, it cannot be the first 5 years that they will seek in the office. That's one. And then based on how the economy strives as it relates to the programs and policies that have been put in place relative to the MF program, based on that, will determine if they have another 5 years in opposition. And then based on that, it will determine if they got another five. So I think they're clearly looking down the street at 15 years. I think what they need to do, right, is to go and take a holiday somewhere and seriously reflect on the damage that they have caused. Because this government, Peter, has enough information that if they can't spoon feed, they can't feed the members of the public all at once, you know. So when you see the turn of the year for the general election, we don't want them at this time. No, no, no. And I'm begging Barbados, don't take no chances with Democratic Left Party ever again in real life. Not for the care of Barbados. The pain that you make them pay for the pain and the suffering that they have caused you. That's the bottom line. I want to thank you, Peter.
All right, Patrick, thanks a lot for calling. Good as always to hear from you. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, sir. Good
morning, sir. How are you doing?
To bad greetings and salutations to
Thank
your
you.
Good self.
Thank you, sir.
Let me first wish our Prime Minister, the Honourable Mayor, Amor Motley, a belated happy birthday. There are two submissions I have this morning. First, quoting from a late USA President, Abraham Lincoln, quote, "Better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to speak and remove all doubt." End of quote. Mr. Wickham, sir, the story which appeared on the Friday of September the 28th, The End Nation, "Move Fast on Death Junction," is alleged to be written by a Charmaine Roland Boyne, the president of the Barbados Road Safety Association. Should be very careful making certain comments especially in the field of road safety. The lady may not be aware, however, if she did not make reference to the breathalyzer testing, I would have remained silent. I was very instrumental in the breathalyzer testing, being the first person to talk of its introduction through the electronic and the print media. Leave that as it may, sir. In your case, there is no politician, B, D, or U, P, P, with care with one's life. And it is an unfortunate statement that the author said that the government was not doing enough for road safety. And expatiate by saying, quote, I am afraid I can't give the current administration a passing grade where road safety is concerned. End of quote. Where was the road safety expert when the then leader of the opposition, now the Prime Minister, the Honourable Mayor Motley, was complaining about road safety while making reference to the entrance of at Coventry in the civil part of Christchurch? I am not sure, I do not know, if she and Mr. Junior Jordan, the veteran driving consultant, and Christian are singing from the same songbook. But it's my belief, if she had consulted with him before coming to the press, she would have avoided her unfortunate statement.
Okay, sir. I want to thank you for your contribution to the program, as always. I have a note here I wanted to read from Ivor. Ivor is saying, Peter, you started off by saying the 2nd of December 2018 and then used both. Sorry, let me read that again. You started off by saying the 2nd of December 2018 and then used double superlatives in relation to Chris. Reference, most cruelest. Methinks it is either cruelest or most cruel. I thank you. And this is an email from Ivor. I've corrected the reference to December, the 2nd of December, which largely appeared because I looked at the corner, bottom hand corner of the computer, and I saw 12, and that was what threw me. So yes, it is the 2nd of October. So thanks to all of the people who have drawn it to my attention, I do realize it's the 2nd of October. Yeah, it's a double superlative and it is inappropriate. It is incorrect English, so I stand corrected where that is concerned. Of course, in a forum like this, one often uses references like that to emphasize the point that one is making. So I do believe I knew when I said the most cruelest that it should either have been, as you said, the cruelest or the most cruel. But I think the most cruelest communicates effectively what I'm saying. It's like a Bajan talking about backing back, you know, or reversing back. It does have a different sense than the original or the grammatically correct phrase. Dr. Bradstacks, good morning. Good morning and welcome. Okay, we're on the air, 434-1790. That's the number you can call. You can also WhatsApp us on 266-IVOB. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Not too bad.
Okay.
How are you going, sir?
I'm fine, man.
Good.
You like all the female politicians, man. Mm-hmm. You love it all.
I have to admit, sir, that one of my special interest areas in politics is women and women in politics, and I've done quite a bit of research recently on gender and the impact of gender on political outcomes. I've done three significant studies for UN Women, Commonwealth, and also on an individual basis. So that's part of the reason that I have this this apparent bias. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
I read your column, I think it was a couple of weeks back when you spoke about 100 days in office.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with everything you said regarding that.
Thank you.
You know, it was a bit low-key. But I guess it's because the government didn't really had a honeymoon as such. It was like hitting the ground running.
So, you know, literally.
literally, right? Mm-hmm. So you had any time to be the honeymoons, really honeymoon. Now, I would like to say it's commendable to the Honorable Prime Minister, her cabinet, the economic team, for their thought that they put up to save the Barbados dollar, and the way how they are moving to the process of, like, you know, rescuing the economy and extraction Barbados, really. Because, you know, you also like to, they get a lot of praise from people internationally, regionally, and locally as well. Despite a few, I would say, distracting voices. But, that would always happen because you can't get 100% in nothing. But some people are knocking the opposition, the people that who's called the program and support the DLP. I would not really knock them. In fact, I would encourage them, right? Because you know why I would encourage them? By encouraging them, I think they will help keep the DLP out of office for another. Now, I can see this DLP in office for at least 30 years. And with their voices, they will add another 5, so probably 35 years. Because, you see, I think a lot of them, they shoot from the lip. They don't really do any research. It is just come with scenarios. So I would like to keep. I would like to hear them on the, you know, on the program.
Do you think that we have reached a watershed in terms of Barbados politics that may result in the demise of the Democratic Labour Party?
I didn't get exactly what you said. Sorry.
Do you think that we have reached a watershed in Barbadian politics where we could see the demise of the Democratic Labour Party? Bearing in mind that there was a party called the Conservative Party that came to its natural end when the DLP emerged. I wondered whether there is a suggestion that is being made in some quarters that the Democratic Labour Party is going through a similar evolution to what happened to the, or we said devolution, to the Conservative Party.
I would think so, you know. Actually, I don't doubt it. I got strong views about that as well. Because if you look, like, in a team, when you're playing sports, you always you look for the strength of the team in the bench, on the benches. Like, okay, your starting 11 is strong, but also your reserves is strong. Mm-hmm. Now, if you look in the DLP, you can't see really the body with real potential. Like, you mentioned the general secretary. You could also mention the president. The whole executive, they're all, to my mind, lacking in political capital. And I hear you've been giving them some, I would say, free advertisement. Because a couple of points that you said to them the other day, you know, it's good information. You get it free. But I don't think they're not going to take the information because they're hell-bent on one focus. Their focus is on Barroday over 30 years now, right? Mm-hmm. The smallest or the youngest member in that party is still focused on Barrow. And look, you know what? They're in denial because, as you rightly said earlier, they can't even come to grips with reality. And they blame everyone except themselves. You know, your first thing for you to get help is to, you got to acknowledge that you need help. But this, like the president, she's coming out, well, I didn't see her the last couple of weeks now writing the paper. No, she come out a couple of weeks. I don't even hear her. Making her assistant, her vice president, she's saying, yes, that they should have gone to the, they should have restructured the economy. But now she's saying she's bringing in, like, resource people to address their party. To look at what the BLP is doing. I thought, why did all bring people to look at what they're doing? Yeah, I believe, to answer the question, yes, I believe so. I do not believe this DLP is going to really reach by any preeminence in this country, not on the course they're on. I don't believe it. I don't see the material. I don't see the planning. I don't see, now, if you would notice, now, the BLP is an older party than the DLP. But you don't hear people in the BLP talking about Sir Grantley Adams, Tom Adams, even to a lesser extent, Owen Arthur. I mean, yes, if you have the mayor, a specific reference to them, you do. But like they had four leaders, and the only leader they talk about is Barrow. They have to come to grips that this is 2018. You know, and reformed the party, but they're obviously they're not prepared or they're incapable of reforming the party. I heard you talk.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, I heard you just mention a couple of youngsters that you said that they sound good. But when you listen to these youngsters are speaking the set language. It's the older fellas. like there's, I always said there's some things you can't defend. I don't think this DLP party can be defended. And like the callers are just called every day and criticizing people, coming with scenarios. They should take a hint from the former ministers. You see what the former ministers doing? You calling out now for Chris. I mean, politically, I think, and I mentioned it to you at time when he was finance minister. I think he was damaging his political. He damaged his political career.
You see, he wrecked it.
He wrecked it. Right. When he held on to that finance ministry, I can remember telling you if I had to give him my advice, I would tell him to bite the bullet and let it go. But you know what? The former prime minister didn't want that, you know, because the former prime minister know quite well once that Mr. Sinclair was holding that finance ministry, he will be shielded from some of the licks. So, and what actually happened then, Mr. Crickley get some of his licks, and he actually damaged his career.
Mm-hmm. I mean, sir, you're very right. I think he wrecked it. He drove it off a cliff.
Yes.
And I think the big mistake was when he went back in the finance ministry after 2013. I would have asked for another assignment.
Thanks,
that was
no thanks.
You know, I like tourism for him. I always said so.
Because tourism
is a ministry that you can't really do badly.
He's very flamboyant and he's articulate. Yeah. I mean, you know, but he wrecked his own career because I can remember well. He was the most popular man in the party. You know, he was the most popular man in the party. Before, he was more popular than Mr. Stewart himself.
Listen to this, sir. I have a quotation from you, a gentleman who just sent a WhatsApp. He said, "Peter, most people agree that the current situation was primarily occasioned by the last administration's policies or lack thereof. It is also accepted that some drastic action is warranted to return the country and by extension its people to a viable, sustainable standard of living. However, I am not convinced that all of the measures proposed or implemented today are the only options, or indeed the best options. For example, I am informed that no government in the world has ever treated bondholders as harshly as what is being proposed. Indeed, one must question how fair it is when 10,000 households are being asked to shoulder half of the burden. How equitable and fair is that? In addition, institutions have to scope and recoup any losses, something individuals are not afforded. The NSRL was to be repealed and replaced with other taxes that effectively resulted in an increased cost of living. Bondholders are therefore facing a double whammy. Where is the equity?"
Over to you, sir. Yeah, the issue, no, I don't want to really classify it to them, but I think Barbados, I say this already, they treat the DLP and the BLP differently. Now, I empathize with those bondholders. I empathize with them. But let's look for one moment at Clico's song, their investments song. This is 9 years. Not one person from Clico has received one receipt. As far as I'm concerned, as far as I'm gathering, with the people with the bond issue, their principle remains. They will get a cut. They will get a cut on their interest. Which is by and large and necessary. Well, you know, not the same thing.
But
they get...
Yeah. No, I'm saying, suppose I am a bondholder and I'm 80 years old now.
Right.
And I happen to know a bondholder who is in their 80s.
Right.
What do you say to me when you tell me I'm to roll over my bond for another 10 years?
Yeah, but I mean, as I said, that'd be a tough decision, as I said.
But of course it's a tough decision, because you're basically telling me that I'm to leave my money for my heirs and successors.
Yeah. Basically, that would happen. But you know, the sad incident happened with the Clico people. I don't even think I hear as much protest. With the Kilgore people were, how many? There were 35,000 policyholders. And I hear the pushback or the fallout with that. And not one of them got a cent. Mm. Not one of them got a cent. But you can't blame this current administration for what is happening now. This is just a result of the 10 years of poor governance. So, yes, you had to do one or two things. As Ms. Morley said, she had to. They had to fight desperately to protect the Barbados dollar from getting devalued. If the Barbados dollar had devalued, gotten devalued, the whole thing would have dropped out.
Yeah.
So that is a result of a poor administration, the work of poor government and governance.
I'm with you on that. My big thing is that I feel that we need to have some initiative on these reverse mortgages fairly soon, because there has to be a facility where older people can get their hands on some of the
cash.
Equity that they hold
in
thing, and some cash to deal with day to day expenses as things get hard. So I believe that is the area that is requiring special attention, and I'm wondering whether the reverse mortgage may not be, or alternatively, some kind of short-term financing allows them to unlock these bonds that you can have wrap up. Can I find somebody at 80 years old shouldn't be telling me about deferment gratitude?
But they were pushing.
I know if I got tomorrow put down.
One of their policies was citing, you just said, the reverse mortgages.
Yeah.
I think they wanted the reverse mortgages, but I know for. I am
nearing approaching the time when I may be able to qualify for one. So, find a word for you, sir. Because Dennis is giving me the signal.
Right.
So you go ahead. Right.
No, that's all right. Thanks.
Okay, all right. Good chatting with you. This is Down to Brass Tacks. We take a break.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Wickham.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. Just two quick points.
Sure.
I just wanted to confirm that Mr. Holliday did in fact go to Harrison College. He was a year or two below me.
So you went to Harrison College too?
I did.
Which means you couldn't get any foundation either?
I couldn't get any foundation either. I'll take up Mr. McDonald on that one at a later date when I see him. Second of all, one of the things you were just talking about with bond holding, one of the things that has not been addressed is really the income portion of it. I know of one pensioner that they lost 85% of their revenue with the new adjustment.
Okay.
So they effectively have to live off of 15% of their what they were accustomed living off of, and I don't think there are many people who could overnight adjust to 15%. And I think that a lot other things should have put into play and thought through this thing in a more process basis.
But let me ask you an important question though. When we're saying 15% less, that's what you're saying?
No, 85%.
Right.
Lost 85%.
What kind of money are we talking about?
I am not sure.
But that's the key point, you know. That's the key point. If you have an investment, the size of which the interest allows you to generate enough money to live on monthly, you're talking about a substantial investment.
Yeah, well, that would have been, because reality is in Barbados, we don't really have too many options for investment.
Which is not, I'm not disagreeing with you, and I'm saying that there is a case that has to be made, but I'm just curious to know what kind of sums of money we're talking about. I mean, I don't know who it is, so it doesn't matter. The person's anonymity is assured. But I'm saying, if you were able to make an investment that would generate, what, $2,000 a month?
I'm not sure what numbers he was dealing with, because I don't know what his income stance is.
Right, but the point I'm making, sir, is if we're going to have this conversation, we need to have it on all fours. So I'm saying, if it is that your investments were generating $2,000 a month in revenue, and that has been cut by 85%, that's a substantial cut. But the point is that if you were able to have an investment, the type of which can generate $2,000 a month in revenue, we're talking about a substantial investment.
Correct.
What kind of money do you have to invest to get $2,000 in interest a month?
I don't know what the interest was that he invested at.
No, so I'm saying, as much as I am concerned about his plight and the fact that he is facing an 85% reduction in his revenue, we're not dealing with somebody who is hand to mouth. And this is the point that's being made.
If he put all his investments in, and that is his, and that's his revenue, if that's his revenue earning, so he's maybe not hand to mouth because he's taking it and put it in investment and then living off the income. But he can't get access to the money. So where does he, if that's the only thing that he has.
Does he receive a contributory or non-contributory pension?
But that's what he said. It's 50, he's down to 15% of what he would normally have.
But let him tell me, I'm curious to know what kind of money he has in savings and bond holdings that he has invested that is generating this kind of money a month. And I don't know who his financial advisor was, right? But I know most financial advisors would always tell you, whether you're dealing with government paper, whether you're dealing with any other investments, you would not lock up everything in one thing. So yeah, there must be money elsewhere.
But no, he doesn't. The problem is that the...
So he invests all his money in government securities?
I can't answer that for him because he only just mentioned it to me this morning.
No, but seriously, have a conversation with him, because I'm not being facetious here or trying to be trite or anything. I'm just saying that if you're going to come to me and say you have an 85% reduction, that's substantial. And I agree that it is nothing to sneeze at. But I'm also saying that if you have the kind of investment that generates, let's say, $3,000, most people over that age can't live on anything less than, let's say, $3,000 a month. Because you're talking about maintaining yourself and you probably have to have a cure and things of that nature. The kind of investment that generates that money monthly is substantial. Where you're looking at just government securities paying you that?
Well, you have to remember at one point in time, government securities was supposed to be what you quote unquote risk-free investment.
Which is fine, and it probably still is the best investment you can make. But I'm saying to buy that kind of government paper, you're talking about millions of dollars. Which means that... Yeah, but the person, and then if it is not millions of dollars, it can't be generating that kind of money monthly.
It'd be impossible for the government to get anybody to borrow any money, buy any government paper after this. Once they default,
I disagree. I disagree with you.
Well, I wouldn't be doing it. That's for sure.
You may not, but the point is that there are other people who will. I think that, for example, the banks and financial institutions will still find government paper the most attractive investment over the long term.
And factor in the political and default risk? No way.
Well, any political and default risk, you have a political risk associated with the fact that we had a period of bad governance. And I'm saying that when you go forward, you know the number of times that financial institutions have come to me and ask for my opinion because they are assessing political risk, right? And I have had situations where people will come and say they will fly someone to Barbados to sit down and have a conversation with me to understand the political risk that they're facing. And I mean, in all fairness, sir, you must have known that the instability of the last 10 years would have been a problem. No?
Yes, but that's why I didn't buy government paper.
Well, but you see, I'm saying the conversation, we can only have half of a conversation now, because while I am siding with you on the 85% reduction, and I'm saying that it is harsh, I also am curious to know what kind of money we're talking about. Because a person who can generate that kind of money monthly from government paper is not a person who is looking to government to increase the non-contributory pension because they can't make ends meet. So poverty is relative.
So where are they going to get the additional revenue?
No, but the point I'm making is that poverty is always relative. So my thing is, if it is that your additional revenue is to what is it to do exactly?
Live off of. That was his thing.
Yeah, but what is the lifestyle? We're going on cruises. What are we doing?
No, but you have to adjust your lifestyle by 85%. So no matter what, regardless of how much is invested, he has to adjust his lifestyle by 85%. So, but that's.
Am I making any sense to you when I say to you that there has to be a relationship between the quantity of the investment and the kind of interest it generates, and that the argument about an investment that is generating enough money monthly based exclusively on government paper for a person to live on is a substantial amount of money, and that person can't be poor?
It's two separate and mutually exclusive. The principle and the revenue portion are two separate, mutually exclusive decisions.
But there must be a relationship between two?
There's a relationship, but they're two mutually exclusive in terms of...
But that's not a problem. But I'm saying that if you're talking about an investment that is generating a monthly revenue, it has to be a substantial investment, no?
Right. Whether it's substantive or not, the reality is he has an 85... He has to adjust his lifestyle by 85%.
But let me ask this question, or let me put the question differently, okay? If I have $1 million investment and it generates $100 a month for me, okay? Right. And I am told that the basis on which that $1 million investment generates $100 is changed, and it can now only generate $15 instead of the $100. My investment is generating $15 and not $100, but I'm still a millionaire, no?
No. you're a millionaire on paper. But you can't go to the grocery store and say, I have $1 million.
And the reason, and the reason why I was saying to that gentleman just now, that we have to find facilities whereby someone who is in that situation, in that age group, can unlock the $1 million in short order to help them deal with their current expenditure, is a concern that has to be raised. Because I'm saying that there's an argument that can be made that a person in that situation needs to have access to the $1 million principle. And I am saying that we can have a conversation about that, but don't come and tell me that that person is poor because the person is a millionaire and they're still a millionaire.
The person is poor. I said they had to adjust their lifestyle by 85%. I never said they were poor. They're a millionaire on paper. I could have a house. I could have a house that's worth $2 million on paper. I'm worth $2 million. But if I can't sell the house, I got to go to the bank or I got to go and do something to try and get the money out. But there's no option. But that wasn't actually what I called in for.
So somebody here is telling me that, Peter, $24,000 in interest can be generated from $400,000 at 6%. Right. So a $400,000 investment can generate $24,000 in interest at 6%. And one presumes that the $24,000 is $2,000 a month that he's talking about. So right. I'm assuming that this person knows what they're talking about, and they're basically saying that if your guy had been worth, had $400,000 to invest, he could generate $2,000 a month. Now, I appreciate that kind of information because I don't know, and it helps me to put it in perspective.
Right.
So my question is, does somebody who have $400,000 to invest, is that person poor?
On paper, no.
Right. And I'm saying right. Then the conversation has to be, how do we get that person accessing some of that $400,000 over a shorter period, because it is fairly clear that they can't live on the interest of that $400,000. The principal, however, they can access if there is a facility whereby they can access it, and perhaps they can take care of themselves in the short term. You know the principle of the reverse mortgage?
Yeah.
The principle of the reverse mortgage is a very simple one. It basically says that if you are holding on to property, substantial property, and you are in a financial bind, it is better for you to pass on a debt to your children than to pass on an asset that's unencumbered. And it's simple. And it's a logic that appeals to me. I think it makes a whole lot of sense because I don't see why your parents should live in poverty just so that they could give you a house in that is without encumbrances. It's better that they mortgage the house, live comfortably while they're alive, and then when they're dead, you will go back for yourself.
But to get out the $400,000, you have to do a discount rate. So you made the $400,000. If you want to get the $400,000, somebody might pay you $300,000.
But then let's have that conversation. And I'm saying that that's the conversation I feel that it would make a lot of sense for us to have. How is the best way that a person in that situation can unlock the $400,000?
Without losing money.
But my question, without losing money, how they can unlock it, period.
Without losing
money. Because the reality of the situation is that if that individual had left the $400,000 in the bank and continued to earn the $24,000 per annum, it probably would stay there until the person dead. And then it would become the property of their heirs and successors that would take it and do whatever. So my point is that after a certain age, to me, there is a reasonable conversation we can have. And I'm saying that the difficulty I am having with this conversation and with others that I've heard that are similar, because it's not going along a line of saying, let's talk about how we can unlock the $400,000. It's saying that it's unfair to cut my interest when the conversation about what is fair or not fair is irrelevant because it is being cut full stop. It has to be done. And there are no other facilities to save this country than having to do that. And they will have to bear that burden. So let's have a conversation about how we can ameliorate the situation.
Why they didn't touch the boat programs? Because those are
How are you going to touch the boat program? How are we going to touch it? Like how?
You touch loans. Those are effectively loans.
But no. I always thought a boat program was rent that you pay.
It's a lease.
You might want to renegotiate the rent or lease.
It's a lease to own. And it is semantics is window dressing loan.
Yeah, but how do you deal with those conditions? I don't know that you can adjust them in the same way.
The government just did it with another debt contract.
Well, you know, maybe that's part of the whole package. I don't know. But I am saying let's not mix that up with what we are having a conversation about with now, which is how are you going to help a person who is living off a $400,000 investment? How are we going to help them in the short term? If that person is 80 years old, personally, I think it is important that that individual gets their hands on some of that money in the short term, because we don't know that they're going to live past 90. Okay,
but
they could.
I will write it, and you will see it. What I'm saying, because I actually didn't call in on that though.
But it's an important issue, so that's why I let you speak on it. Encourage you.
Yeah,
to.
No problem. I heard a gentleman ask you last week a question on was investigative journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Now I did try to call in last week, but I wanted to offer context to that query. There are questions which should have been asked Attorney General Dale Marshall on the money laundering case of the ex-minister Don Valinis. There are questions more related to the function of the FIU and the FSC, as well as the role and responsibility of the directors of the ICBL. For me, these are potentially more of a concern than the alleged actions of the ex-minister. Now, the FIU acts as a buffer between the financial institutions and law enforcement. And the FIU reports to the Attorney General. The FSC reports the Minister of Finance. Now, ICBL said they reported it. Now, did they report it to the FIU? If so, did the FIU report it to the legal authorities? And if not, why not? And under the current Anti-Corruption Act, I think the 1927 Act, you have 6 months in which to bring a case against somebody where notification has been given. So the question is where the clock starts, because if ICBL said it reported it in 2017, and we are kind of now hearing about it, where did the clock start? But their responsibilities for the breach of where the breach of who reported it to who, because the failure to report and possibly failure to act is more serious ramifications than the actual case against the ex-minister. And my concern is who reported to who and who didn't take action. And those are the kind of questions that should have been asked to the Attorney General.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sir. That's I can't disagree with you on that point. The other point you were making is a lot more controversial, but you're making, in terms of this other point, is one that can, I think, stand on its own. And I agree with you. All right, sir, we're going to have to run. I'm told we need to take... Okay, I'm sorry, we can continue. Right, I have a message here from a gentleman who is saying, Peter, I invested $150,000 in treasury notes, and I was receiving approximately $4,800 every 6 months. Now I will only be paid $375. I do not have a job. How will I survive? You need to ask me and our advisors how I can spend $375 now that I will be getting in interest. I was laid off in May of 2017 and have not found a job yet. Now, I appreciate this response because it is the kind of context that I think helps us to have a meaningful conversation. It seems like this individual is speaking to the same kind of conversation that the other person was having just now. And I think that both are worthy of consideration. And as I was suggesting, if it is a question of $150,000 investment that a person still technically speaking has access to, the question then ought to be, what are the ways and means of unlocking access to some of those funds, or alternatively generating alternative investments in the short term? We take a break, and when we come back, we continue with more of Down to Brass Tacks.